Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. One of the biggest questions from the primary elections this week is what they prove about President Donald Trump and his enduring power as the midterms come into focus. And to that point, there have been some surprising breaks between the GOP leadership and the president. Here's more from WCCO in Minneapolis.
The fund would have compensated the president's allies, including rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. This was put on hold a few days ago by the courts. The Department of Justice said they would comply with that order, but that was not enough to satisfy Republicans. They wanted a public commitment. The fund would be dropped entirely. All of this was part of an IRS settlement where the president agreed to drop his $10 billion lawsuit. But despite dropping the fund, the administration has made it clear it is still keeping an order that bans the president and his family from audits of already filed tax returns. Democrats labeling that blanket immunity. A judge in Florida is now reviewing the deal.
I'm Steve Simpson. The House of Representatives delivering a rare rebuke to President Trump over the war with Iran, passing a resolution yesterday directing him to stop military action unless he gets approval from Congress. ABC senior political correspondent Rachel Scott.
Four Republicans joining Democrats to support a war powers resolution requiring the president to withdraw U.S. forces in Iran unless Congress approves military action. While the measure is an uphill battle, it's a sign of the growing fractures within the president's own party over his handling of the war.
That resolution would still need to be passed in the Senate. That appears unlikely at this point. Israel and Lebanon have agreed to a new ceasefire that includes a series of pilot security zones where Hezbollah militants would be banned. That's according to a joint statement released after a fourth round of U.S.-mediated talks. The Israeli ambassador to the U.S. calling the agreement unprecedented.
We brought the people of Lebanon to the understanding that we're not the enemy. Hezbollah is. And now we're going to work together to rid the country of this Iranian proxy on Israel's border, which deprives Israel of its security and the Lebanese people of their freedom.
Israel and Lebanon have agreed to reconvene the week of June 22nd for what the country representatives call a view toward reaching a comprehensive agreement.
Here's more on members of the GOP defying the president from Tommy Tucker in New Orleans.
David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University, and law, I should add. I don't know, is this going to consolidate the president's power? Is it going to weaken it, somehow dilute it? Tell me, what is your take on this?
I think it's a little bit of both. And we should also point out the fact that, you know, think about presidents are at their most powerful when they first get sworn in, gradually weaken over time, and clearly after the midterm elections, especially if they're a second termer like Trump, they dramatically become like lame ducks at this point. So Trump's inevitably going to become weaker after the midterm elections anyhow. So when I'm listening to the AP story, I'm thinking on the one hand, well, the president is going to become weaker, but at the same time, Trump is right. He's been very successful in consolidating his base. And so he may have a combination of a more loyal base, but depending on what happens in the midterms, a smaller base, a base that might not be in the majority, or if it is in the majority, a base that doesn't, or some parts of it that doesn't completely align with his interests because they're worried about reelection. So there's lots of trends going on there.
When it comes to the president making these decisions, I wonder if it's about the future of the MAGA nation, if it's about settling old scores, if it's about the future or the last 2 years of his presidency as he sees it playing out. Is there a strategy here? Is he shooting from the hip? What do you think?
A lot of it appears to be, and again, we can't read his mind, you know, but a lot of it appears to be securing old scores, getting even with people he doesn't like. I mean, he's pretty well known for wanting, you know, highly intense loyalty and for punishing people who disagree with him. So I think that's part of it. But also part of it is that he is starting to think about legacy now. I mean, the fact that he wants to do things like build an arch, put a ballroom on the, a new ballroom on the White House, things like that. I think he's starting to think about what his marks are. But his marks seem to be, at least in some examples here, very, on very short term at this point. He's not looking at, what I can tell right now, policy agenda in terms of longer term legacies. But I don't know, the Trump arch, the Trump ballroom, the Trump reflecting pool. It's a different way of thinking about the legacy that he wants to leave at this point.
What seems so silly about that to me, frankly, is that when you talk about legacy and changes that you've made, look at the Supreme Court. That's a legacy. That's something that's not an arch or a ballroom. That's something that changed American policy for a long time in a drastic
way. Absolutely. Absolutely correct. I was going to say is that his three appointments and possibly, a fourth one, because there's on again, off again rumors about maybe Alito stepping down at the end of the term. But three Supreme Court nominees, and in terms of how they've changed the trajectory of American politics, whether it's on reproductive rights, the Voting Rights Act and so forth like that. I mean, he has remade American politics pretty significantly. I was going to say probably the greatest remaking of American politics since I think Ronald Reagan did, Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. And then before that, it would have been probably Lyndon Johnson or something like that. So we're basically looking at, for good or for bad, a once in a lifetime presidency that has had a huge impact, but you're right. His impact has been through the courts and it's going to continue to be through the courts, pending what happens, with the Senate elections. And so he has made major policy changes. And internationally, I would say he's clearly had huge changes in terms of changing, the trajectory of American politics and the way that he's been approaching things like Venezuela, Cuba, Iran. It's like he wants to combination settle old scores or maybe just want get old fights over or something like that. Mm-hmm. We've been worried about Iran for over 40 years. I think his approach has been, let's just solve this now. We've been worried about Cuba for 60, almost 70 years. Let's just solve this now. And so I do think there is, again, both selling old scores and legacies here.
And I think if he would focus, my advice to him would be, you focus on the serious stuff. Don't worry about the arch. Don't worry about the reflecting pool. Don't worry about all that stuff. That'll take care of itself. And that's not what people are going to remember anyway. So somebody texted in, yeah, right. Supreme Court, as if any Supreme Court justice will outlive the ballroom and its legacy. I don't know if they're being sarcastic or not, but nobody's going to remember a ballroom or they might make passing reference to it. But you're talking about a Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade, that had a massive ruling on the Voting Rights Act or redistricting, et cetera, not to mention some of the other ways that they reshaped the country. So I don't know if people are getting caught up on the sideshow and not the circus. I don't know. Thoughts, David?
You may be right. But also, again, if you think about Trump before his presidency, liked to have the word Trump written on just about every building that he owned, the Trump Towers, et cetera, et cetera. I think he likes the idea of having physical buildings or something physical that bears the Trump imprint, whether it's a building, currency, whatever it is like that. And so even though I think his more significant impacts, you're right, are certainly going to be upon the Supreme Court, let's say on U.S. foreign aid and a whole bunch of different things, he appears also focused on the idea of liking his brand put out a whole bunch of physical structures. And so he may just be one of those kind of people. And some of us are that way. Some people are more visual versus more, conceptual or something like that.
As you say that, it makes me think of a running back as opposed to an offensive lineman. A running back wants all the credit and the glory. An offensive lineman is like, you know what? I don't care if they remember me or not. I know that would not have happened if not for me. So maybe that's what it is.
It may be. I was going to use maybe the quarterback analogy, but sort of the same idea there. Or in baseball, I think catchers are the most important players in the position, but they don't usually get the big name recognition or something like that. So maybe like that. He may want to have the name out there as opposed to the legacy, if I can call it that.
So what happens from here if Cornyn loses? Cassidy, we know what happened with him. Does he then have a really tough time until the midterms because these guys are going to start speaking their mind? Is it a short-term win or a short-term loss, long-term win, the other way around? Tell me.
He gets a short-term win, but they're now going to be even more independent, and you're going to see people perhaps now be more like Massey in that, to say that I can vote my conscience and not vote my fears.
Does that put does that have any effect on his base at all?
His base, it doesn't affect whatsoever. It affects his ability to move policy through Congress, though.
Have we seen any erosion of his base at all ever since he...
Nope. I mean, his base is, what, 34 to 37%? They're with him no matter what at this point. I mean, remember his statement before he ran? He could stand, was on Fifth Avenue, shoot somebody. I think his statement was actually correct.
And no erosion in that base at all, no matter what?
No matter what.
Gotcha.
Speaking of elections, are we facing down the first AI election? Here's Vanita Saucer on WCCO.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lois Olson with The Morning Take. And the center of this is accusations of AI use and whether it should be used in political ads. And obviously, there was some manipulation done in this ad that was put together by a PAC, Blois.
Yes, good morning, Vanita. I think others have said it, but I think we are experiencing the AI election. And that's a multifaceted designation. And this is the first major discussion, is this particular ad. So this ad came out Monday, had it in The Morning Take on Monday. Thought it was a traditional political ad that one campaign or one interest group would run against somebody else. Yesterday, out comes the Flanagan campaign calling this a AI deep fake. Now, this is where I think you start to parse words. And again, like I said, this is multifaceted. So first and foremost, there is a law in Minnesota that says you cannot use AI deepfakes in political ads. Two, what is a deepfake? The way I look at this ad is to say it is animated, probably computer generated, likely. I don't know. What's the difference between computer generated and AI? We've seen for years and years and years manipulated, grainy photos. And now because the computer did it, it's AI. We don't know. I think, and then the biggest thing is, what's a deep fake? I had always thought to myself, and still kind of think to myself, that a deep fake is somewhere, for instance, if it was a radio ad and they used Peggy Flanagan's voice and they generated her voice to say words she never said. To me, that's a deep fake rather than an image that's an animation that is not. I mean, it's a picture of her. It's a picture she used in her campaign. They just animated it in a way campaigns have for years. But the way in which you frame it and you attack your opponent of saying you're using AI, I think is as much about the fear of AI in voters as to the actual, did AI get used or not? It's kind of a distraction.
I'm glad you talked a little bit more about deepfakes, because you, just to describe to our listeners, in the ad, they've manipulated her image. She's got a big mound of cash behind her, and they use this picture, and her arms are folded in the picture, the regular picture that they based it on. But in the ad, her hand is out like she's asking for money. You know, like she's begging
her
for money.
Her arms are moving. Yeah, right. Her arms are moving in the ad. Now, I've seen ads before where they make candidates or caricature of a candidate do move around. And so how is this different? And I don't know. I think the real example, the real issue here is that, I don't know, the court may decide whether or not this breaks Minnesota law or not. And that's where the speed of campaigning is such that, is it the accusation that makes people think, look at the ad twice or three times, or is it the, do the courts catch up? And in a U.S. Senate race, it's one thing. But if you start to use deepfakes in a local race, think, call it a legislative race or a city council race, it would be daunting to be that candidate and try to stop it. There is this other overarching part of our communities right now in our society is that if you use the term AI and you talk about the AI infrastructure from data centers to energy to water, it is a fear economy. And will you lose your job because of AI? And I think that navigating that in the context of the already harsh tones of a political campaign are something that we just have to be really mindful and conscious of as listeners and viewers this year. Otherwise, I think everything's going to be AI, everything's going to be evil. And the reality is it's the future. We have to figure out how to get there and do it with some sort of trust, which we know is broken.
Right. And to me, if you're using AI to manipulate the sound of someone's voice saying something that they really didn't say, that is a concern. This, like you said, is similar to when they've done computer generated things in the past. But I do want to bring up Representative Craig has been pretty strong about not using using AI in political ads. What kind of control does she have over PACs that do this?
Yeah, this ad is run by a super PAC in her support. She has no control. She can't coordinate with them at all. The most she could do if she disagreed with the ad or if she said something would be to say, I would hope they would take that down publicly. And then if they listen to her, they listen to her. But this is the kind of thing that, at the end of the day, by the way, this ad's now getting way more attention than it would have before. And sure. That's the next thing is do you call attention to this ad that is, I think, about the fundraising? One of the central points of Representative Craig's critiques of Peggy Flanagan. Peggy Flanagan says she doesn't take special interest money, but she was the chair of the LG committee and they do.
Okay.
So there you go.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.